Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of For You From Eve. We are back with another guest episode today. You guys know I've been trying to get back into my guest episodes recently, and I'm so excited for today's guest episode. I have Katie here today, and I've been binge reading her book, Want Yourself, recently, which is all about shifting your self-talk underneath the strength and who you were all along. You guys know I'm always talking about the self-love journey and the healing journey, and there's no one better to have on right now than Katie. So Katie, do you want to do a little introduction? Who you are, where you're from, what you do, all that good stuff.
Yeah, so my name is Katie Horwich. I am a writer, a speaker, a mindset coach, a self-talk activist. I have been doing work around helping people shift their negative self-talk for over a decade, close to two decades, and wow. I'm the founder of a platform called WANT, which stands for Women Against Negative Talk, and it's a platform that gives people tips, tools, motivation, inspiration, resources to shift their negative self-talk patterns. And like you said, I am the author of the newly released book, Want Yourself, Shift Your Self-Talk, and Unearth the Strength in Who You Were All Along.
Yes, and like I said, I've been reading your book, and my audience is mostly females, and I always get so many direct messages about self-talk and confidence, because I feel like going into your 20s, exiting your 20s, and going into your 30s, insecurities, they don't stop at a certain age or when you reach a certain thing. You're always going to be a little self-conscious about something. And I know for myself, you know, starting my 20s now, it's one of those things where I've gained so much confidence compared to when I was 17 or 18, but I still get that kind of like crept in insecurity sometimes where I'm like, why is, like, what is this in my head? So before we go into what is negative self-talk and all that stuff, what got you into this space? What made you want to help women with the way that they viewed themselves?
Yeah, it was really, I was pretty much exactly around the same point in my life that you're in right now. So like, I love that we are talking about this. I grew up with actually a lot of self-confidence, but the lens that I viewed the self-confidence through, I describe it as all murky and scratched up, because I grew up like born in the 80s, child of the 90s, like firm millennial here. And we sometimes take for granted this mental health conversation that we have today. But when I was growing up, confidence, especially when it came to women having confidence, that was synonymous with being narcissistic or being vain or stuck up. And so I had this push and pull throughout my life. I was also highly, highly sensitive, and not just sensitive like my emotions, but I was sensitive to the lights in a room, the sounds around me. I could walk into a room and sort of sense what was going on with each person before they even said anything to me. And that high sensitivity, when I was in college, sort of started to work against me, where I felt like I was so out of place, out of my lane of control that I was used to. I had internalized this negative self-talk from the people in my life around me. Didn't realize it yet, but I had. And I developed a whole host of eating disorders, body image issues, and what was going on at the time for me was sort of like this big Venn diagram of all of these different mental illnesses. And that wasn't being talked about back then. And so I was actually in a voice lesson, because I was a musical theater major. My voice teacher called me out on it. And she was like, I don't know what's happening with you, Katie, but you have to get it under control because it's starting to affect your voice. And now, like, as a writer, yeah, I just see all of the metaphors there. And so I started to get really curious about what had gotten me where I was at that point. And what I realized was, like I said, I had been internalizing this negative self-talk from the people around me, from the world around me, my entire life. And it had become habitual for me. I'd become fluent in this language. So, of course, when I got to a point in my life where things felt really, really hard for me, that was the thing that I was used to. It was the habit that I had built. And I realized that if I wanted to move forward, I had to get underneath not only what was going on and the habits that I had built, but how I could move forward in a real, lasting way.
Yeah, and I like how you said when you walked into a room, you were very aware of like the lights, the noise, the people around you. And I feel like that's a good description of just like living in your head where you don't know where your feet are. And like, I feel that way too. And like you said, it wasn't talked about. Even when I was growing up, it wasn't really talked about. I feel like until like quarantine time, that's when people were like, wait, what is going on? Because we're all stuck at home by ourselves and you're starting to realize a lot. And that's when people started to talk about it. And it is a little bit uncomfortable for some people. And I actually just recorded this past guest episode where, you know, my guest was saying, like, for women now, we talk about it. We do these shows. We talk to a female audience. And she said a lot of things that men struggle with is they don't have that space yet. So, like, we're kind of still breaking into it as women. But there's still men who haven't really been able to have that, like, comfort space. And I love how we're comfortable enough to talk about this now because it honestly, it really has had such an outbreak when people have realized what happens when you don't talk about it. And I feel like there's also a big difference between it being normalized versus it being romanticized. And I feel like social media sometimes can romanticize mental illnesses and be like, I have anxiety. But really, like, you know, I'll see a friend be like, I have anxiety right now. And I'm like, no, you don't. Like, you're just stressed out about one little thing. And then they're like, oh, yeah, that's true. And it's like, it's getting romanticized in a way, too. What's kind of your opinion with the way social media is reconstructing mental illness and the way they're reconstructing this negative self-talk versus what it's actually like?
Yeah, I mean, I think that social media has done a lot of good. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that people are talking about things like anxiety to begin with, like, that is revolutionary. That is incredible. And also, I think the way that social media is sort of engineered is to make things as soundbiteable as possible, and it boils things down to the lowest common denominator when you're talking about things that actually are really nuanced, really individualized. And so what can end up happening is, I love that you said people romanticize it. I think that people can romanticize that, or they can go on the opposite end and they can think, oh, well, if I just do this, then my life is going to be fixed and it's going to be amazing. And that's just not how life works, because life is complicated and we are humans and humans are complicated, which means that what we need to move forward is also going to have to address the complications and the nuances of who we are. And so I think that while social media can do a lot of good, I think it's important for us as we move forward with social media, especially people like you or people like me who are talking about these things, being really intentional with the words that we're using and making sure that we are not oversimplifying, overgeneralizing things that are going to end up making people feel like, well, this person said I should just do this. I just did that and it's not working. So there must be something wrong with me, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Like you said, even people are like, just do a face mask and take a shower and do this, like meditate for 10 minutes and you'll wake up fine. And it's like, you could wake up in a better mood, but if you're still having those anxious thoughts, you might be like, oh no, it didn't like fix me or, you know, whatever. Now there's something really wrong with me. And I feel like a lot of the time, like you said, social media is a great thing because it's giving a lot of resources on how to deal with these things if you struggle with them. Mm-hmm. But it's also having people diagnose themselves with something where they just think, oh, if other people have this, this might be what I have. And I feel like it's always better to be safe than sorry. And there's nothing wrong with meditating and, you know, doing self-care, whether you have something or not. But I do agree with the fact that social media has played more of a positive factor, I would say, than a negative factor. I think social media is only really negative if you let it be, if you let those hate comments matter. If you're on that like negative toxic side of like your For You page, if that's where the algorithm takes you. But I know for me personally, and especially what we do with work, social media has helped us so much. It's, we probably wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for social media.
Yeah.
So it's helped in so many ways too. And it does help to even have these conversations. And before I even had you on, I had, you know, posted on my story, like, what do you guys want me to ask? Like, you know, it helps to engage people in conversation, which I love.
It's the social part of social media. And there are studies around this. There are studies that have shown that if we are actually using social media in a social way, like how we would socialize out in the real world, it can actually have positive mental health benefits. Mm-hmm. It's when we lean into the media part of it, of just like constant consumption, where we start to get into the comparison trap, where we start to go down really harmful rabbit holes that can be harmful not just for our own mental health, but and we can talk about this later because it has to do with self-talk, but yeah. like the way that we interact with people out in the world, mm-hmm. like it can really create that sort of binary of good versus bad, evil versus like the hero, because those are really, really simple things that if we're consuming things as media, like we see that in movies. We yeah. see those archetypes. And that's where I found things can go down a really dark path.
Yeah, I agree. And like you were talking about self-talk before, how would you kind of explain self-talk to someone? And if people are listening and they're like, oh, yeah, I definitely have negative self-thoughts, how do they fix that? How do they stop that? Because obviously it's so much easier said than done. And, you know, you could decide today I'm not going to let it get to me, but then tomorrow morning you can't really control the thoughts. You can really only control the things you do about it. So what is your advice for people who want those thoughts to just stop overall?
Yeah. Well, I think that I love that you started with what is self-talk, because yeah. sometimes people are like, I don't even know yeah. what that phrase means. So I describe self-talk as the story that you tell yourself 24/7 as you walk through the world. So it's the narrative that you've got going on that tells you who you believe you are and how you believe you should interact with the world around you. Mm-hmm. And it's not inherently positive or negative. It's information. It's what we do with that information that informs what we do next and next and next and next. So what I found really, really interesting when I was writing the book and doing research is that there's actually a whole subset of people who do not experience their self-talk as words, as like talk itself. Are you an internal monologue person? Or
I don't know.
Okay.
I
yeah.
think so. Like talking in my thoughts?
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Okay. So yeah, me too. I okay. just have this internal monologue going all of the time. But mm-hmm. I was actually just having a conversation with someone who she said, I am more of a feelings person. So some people experience their self-talk, if you will, mm-hmm. as feelings or in visuals, like a movie playing out in their mind. So what's really interesting is that a lot of times when people talk about shifting their self-talk, they jump straight to the talk part. Yeah. But then that's ignoring all the people who aren't talking to themselves to begin with and are feeling those feelings of just, or eek, or mm-hmm. whatever it is, or seeing a movie. So in order to shift your self-talk for real, you actually can't start with the talk and replace one word with another, because that's symptomatic. You have to get underneath what's going on and start with the first part of the equation, which is the self part of the self-talk.
Yeah, I kind of get that. I feel like also when it comes to, like you said, someone having feelings versus someone having internal monologue, I didn't even mm-hmm. know what internal monologue was until you said it. And I'm like, there's constantly things going on in my head. Like no matter where I am, no matter what I'm doing, there's thoughts going on.
You're
in
like
my head.
Always narrating
always,
the world to
always.
Yourself.
Do yeah. you know why there's people that are like that versus people why there's just like feeling?
I mean, it's that's kind of like asking why are there people who have brown hair and why are there people yeah. who have blonde hair? Mm-hmm. There are many different types of humans out there. And going back to our conversation about social media, that's why sometimes these things can be so dangerous, because we are all so different. Yeah. Before we started recording, we were talking about how people consume their podcasts. Some people like to watch. Mm-hmm. Some people like to listen. Like, we are all different. And I think when we recognize that, that's when we can start to free ourselves of, if I didn't do this thing properly, then I must be bad. Or this idea of, I did this thing and it didn't work, so there must be something wrong with me. Mm-hmm. Once we start to get underneath and get to that self part of self-talk yeah. and figure out, okay, well, what is the truthiest truth of who I am? And then how do I be proactive with that sense of self? So not just like let that sense of self live on the inside and then try and pretend on the outside. How do I let myself live out loud, if mm-hmm. you will? That's when we actually start to shift our negative self-talk, no matter how you're experiencing it, because it's not about the how, it's about what's underneath.
Yeah, and I feel like in today's world too, even just going with that internal monologue, we're so overstimulated with everything. And that's a word that I honestly never really heard about until recently. And now I'm like, oh my God, I'm so over it. Like, I know when to kind of take myself out for a second. And it's like, that's very okay to do if, like, I'm in a good mood and I go out and, you know, I'm getting ready and I'm happy and I'm with my friends. And then I'm at the bar and an hour and I'm starting to feel this, like, negative self-talk or this anxiety. I know to just, like, take myself out of it for a second and just be like, you're not here right now. Like, just give yourself a breather, go outside for air, go to the bathroom, and not to kind of feel guilty for that self-talk. What is your advice for people who feel guilty when they, you know, get mad at themselves for looking a certain way or kind of just any type of way of getting down on themselves and they feel that guilt towards themselves?
Yeah. So I like to talk about that we have these feelings and then we have the feelings about the feelings. So when we're talking about guilt, that's a feeling that we're having about a feeling. So you might be feeling, let's say you just used, I think that looks are a very easy example because I think that pretty much all of us have experienced some sort of discomfort in our bodies at some point in our lives because we're humans and we're not robots.
Yes.
So if people are feeling uncomfortable, I think the first step is to recognize what's what, right? So there's the discomfort, and a lot of times we will jump straight to the guilt or the self-loathing. And it's like, okay, well, but that's actually different than just feeling uncomfortable. Because if self-talk isn't inherently good or bad, it's information. That's information. Mm-hmm. I feel uncomfortable. And people have talked about, especially in like mindset communities, wellness communities, like neutralizing thoughts, that can be really, really hard to jump to in the moment, especially when you're feeling something that feels so heavy and so all-encompassing. So I always tell people to start by separating what's what. Okay, so I feel uncomfortable and now I feel guilty about being uncomfortable. Well, why do I feel guilty about being uncomfortable? Do I think that I should be a different way? Is it easier sometimes for me to feel guilty about this thing than addressing something else bigger that's going on in my life? I know that for me, when I was in the thick of my own struggles with my own body, like, it wasn't about my body, but I felt uncomfortable in the skin I was in because I was uncomfortable in my environment and in the places that I was putting myself into, just like pretending over and over to be someone I'm not. And your body can be a really easy scapegoat for those uncomfortable feelings. So I think getting to, okay, what is the information about what's going on with me? That is the first step. And I think it's really important for people to practice that in the times that feel more neutral, because a lot of times when we talk about shifting our negative self-talk, we think, okay, well, I want to shift it in the hardest moments. It's going to be really freaking hard to shift it in the moments that feel like everything inside of you just wants to lean on habits that you've already developed or just wants to keep you safe. And so just like building any habit or playing a sport, like, you have to practice. And so if we can start to tease these things apart and figure out what's what in the times that feel more neutral in our lives, then we're doing our future self a solid, because once those times come up, we will have built more tools that we have in our toolkit.
Yeah. And like you were saying before, I want to highlight you saying when you're in a situation where you're uncomfortable because you're putting yourself in that situation, you're thinking to yourself, you feel guilty because you're like, wait, aren't I supposed to be enjoying this? Like, especially in your 20s and 30s, like, you're supposed to want to go out. You're supposed to want to drink and go out with friends. And if there's someone that doesn't enjoy that, but she's in a circle of friends that do enjoy that, she might feel like something's wrong with her. And she might be like, well, why don't I like this stuff? So then when I'm at the bars, why am I anxious? Why do I want to go home and crawl into a ball? Like, what is your advice for someone who maybe feels like they do have to have that this certain lifestyle, but they kind of want more of that quiet life?
Yeah. Well, I am a quiet life person. Mm-hmm. I am a big fan of the cozy nook and just holding myself up in the little cozy nooks of my home. I love people, but I am – an introvert at my core, which means that I am someone who starts the day with a certain battery life and it gets depleted as the day goes on. Mm-hmm. And I find, for me personally, when I get myself in situations where I feel like, I need to go to this thing, but I don't want to, so what's wrong with me? Everybody's going, or I'm in a situation, it feels like everybody's enjoying themselves, but I'm not. I think that, and I've been doing this work now for a long, long time. I think this week I actually celebrated my 16-year anniversary.
Wow, congrats.
Thank you. First thinking of the idea for once. So this is like, I've been practicing this for a while. And I think that being able to honor who you are, like I said, it doesn't begin in the moments where you need to, like, you're clinging for that and clinging for that help. It starts in the more neutral times. And so doing sort of a check in with yourself when, if you're feeling depleted at certain times, checking in, okay, well, when do I feel the most energized? Mm-hmm. Or even asking yourself, well, why do I think that I need to be this way? Or why do I think that this person will think a certain thing if I don't do this? Like, asking yourself open-ended questions and answering your own rhetorical questions. I'm a big fan of that. That can be really useful. Like, I know that sometimes I can say to myself, like, ugh, like, why can't I just get myself together? Okay, well, why? Why can't you just get yourself together? Mm-hmm. What's going on here? Then your brain really likes questions, and so it's going to latch onto that question to start to find answers to it instead of looking outside of yourself to, okay, well, I am comparing myself to this person. I need to be like this. It really all starts, again, like you said, easier said than done, but it all starts with being willing to dive in and dig deep and figure out, who am I at my core, and how do I want that person to live out loud, and how can I give myself reasons to trust myself? Because there are times that I know I've been in situations that have gone against my own trust. I've broken my own trust because maybe I've said something, like, I don't know, maybe I fed into some gossip about someone and I felt really icky after. That was me breaking my own trust, or me staying out late and having an extra drink when I really wanted to go to sleep early that day. That's me breaking my own trust. So giving yourself proof that you can trust yourself over and over, it's like a big collective exhale for your entire body of, like, oh yeah, I'm on my own side.
Yeah.
So that when you get into those situations, you know that you have yourself as a teammate in there. Does that make sense?
Yes. And I love how you said to go in, like, think inwardly, ask yourself open-ended questions. Don't go outwardly of, well, why does this person like this? And why does this girl like this? Like, ask yourself, why don't I like this? And, like, I think that's so important, because I always say, I think it's like, if you plant the seed and, like, the flower doesn't bloom, do you blame the flower, or do you blame yourself for not putting enough water into it, for not putting it in the sun enough, for not putting it in the right environment? And that's how we have to be with ourselves, you know, instead of getting mad that we're not living life a certain way or enjoying things that we think we should enjoy, you need to look at yourself and be like, am I fueling myself with enough self-love, hard work, all these things to want to do those things?
You totally.
Know, I know for me, like, I went through both, where I kind of, like, liked the quiet life when I was, like, 18 to, like, 21. And I was like, I just want to be home. I don't want to go out. And then, like, something hit me and I was like, okay, I want to go out now. And it was because during those times, you know, and I'm not saying this is the case for everyone who likes a quiet life, I was a little bit more insecure and, like, self-conscious. So I didn't want to go out because of that, because I was insecure about my skin or the way my body looked. And just in general, like, I wasn't happy with what I was doing in life. Mm-hmm. So I didn't feel like, oh, I could reward myself with going out, if that makes sense. Like, I didn't have the urge because I didn't have the confidence. And in the past, like, year or two, I've gained so much confidence and just, like, self-love that I'm like, I want to go out. I want to enjoy myself. I want to meet new people. You know, meeting new people is such a big part of your 20s. And if you don't have a good relationship with yourself, that's such a hard thing to, like, put yourself out there and do.
Totally. And I mean, when I went to college, I was like I said, I was a musical theater major, mm-hmm. and I wanted to go and like get into all of the shows and do the work and then go out and be a successful professional adult. And to no one's surprise except for me, that's not how most people enter their freshman year of college. No. And I felt really out of place because I was like, I don't like to go party. I don't want to go drink. I want to like rehearse my lines or, you know, work on myself or my craft or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel like I'm like everybody else. And I think it's sort of Instagrammable or like TikTokable to say like, okay, well, why does that matter? Why does it matter what other people think? Like, what do you think of you? But I think that when you're able to ask yourself, if you're asking yourself like, well, what will they think if I don't do this or if I'm not this way? I think following that up with the question of, well, but what will I think? That can be really powerful, yeah. because then you start to just, again, like separate other people's expectations or your idea of other people's expectations, because sometimes those expectations don't even exist and you've created them yeah. in your brain. Separating what's other people's and what's yours can be a really powerful first step if you're feeling like, I don't know where I fit. Like, the goal is to belong to yourself, to be able to be yourself wherever you go instead of being like this social chameleon. Mm-hmm. And I wish that I had been able to internalize that lesson when I was, whatever, 17, 18, 19 years old. But I also was able to get curious about that later on, which led me to doing the work that I do today.
Yeah, and knowing who you are, you know what you're bringing to the table when you enter a room, and you mm-hmm. no longer have to question what other people are thinking about you or what other people's intentions are with you, because you're content with like who you are, what you do, what you're offering when you get there. And it's so powerful, especially I think for a woman in your 20s, if you're getting mm-hmm. into the work field, a woman in her 30s, like whatever it is, whether you're trying to find a relationship or you're trying to find a job, like when you take back your power, like that is the only way that the path will like open up for you.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not a bad thing, and you're not failing if mm-hmm. those questions come in of yeah. what do they think, or if you find yourself trying to fit in a mold of what other people want. Like, that doesn't mean that you're failing at the whole self-love and confidence thing. Those are natural things, because we're humans. We are social beings, and we are also like, we're influenceable. It's part of the makeup of what makes us humans and not a flower or a bear in the woods. Like, we are meant to be communal beings and sort of bounce off of one another. And so I think once we can stop villainizing these things that feel uncomfortable to us and recognize that they're a part of the human experience, then that opens up the question of, okay, well, then what else? Yeah. So if this is something that is going to happen through the highs, the lows of my life, what can be the constant that I bring to the table that entire time? And that's when you get to the point where it's like, okay, I might think of how other people might want me to be, but I'm also very clear on who I believe myself to be and how I am passionate about being in the world. And like, that's how you build self-worth, mm-hmm. because worth is a comparative thing. It has to do with value. Yep. So you've got to feel the value in yourself when you're walking through the world, so that you're not just seeing the value outside of yourself, because mm-hmm. that's dangerous.
And you're going to be constantly searching if totally. That's what you're doing.
Yeah.
I want to talk about your book a little bit.
Yes.
I was just telling you how one chapter that stood out to me, I annotated your book because this chapter I just loved, and it was chapter 3, Lonely is Love with Nowhere to Go. Mm-hmm. And the reason I loved it so much, and I took one
quote. You highlighted
it. Oh yeah. For everyone looking.
That just made my day.
Yeah, no, I'm very like type A with this stuff. Two things I wanted to highlight. One was when you said, but to belong to myself, I will also have to be okay with it, which I am not. Mm-hmm. And that's a mindset that I think I keep saying, like, a woman in her 20s just because that's, like, me right now. So that's what I see my friends and, like, people I know going through. But this is obviously for a woman in her teens, a woman in her 30s, a woman in her 40s. Being alone. Mm-hmm. The difference of being alone versus mm-hmm. being lonely. Can you talk mm-hmm. a little bit about the difference of those two?
Yeah. So being alone is more of a physical thing. Like, we are not alone right now because we are in the physical presence of each other. Loneliness, however, is a feeling, and it's a feeling that you can feel whether you are surrounded by a group of people or you are sitting by yourself. It really actually has nothing to do with the quantity of people that surround you. It's more about the quality of connections in your life. So I feel very connected to you right now. However, it could be a different situation where I could be in here and I have my team member slash friend Jesse to my side. I could feel like none of us are connected and I could feel really lonely in this experience. And that's a completely different thing than just being a solitary person in a room. And so when I talk about lonely is love with nowhere to go, loneliness requires there to be some sort of longing present. And if that longing isn't present, then it might be something else. So let's just take this non-reality hypothetical example. I'm here, I'm doing a podcast with you. If we were not connected, if I was not connected with Jesse and I felt really lonely, for me, what that would feel like in the moment is I feel like I want to have a connection. I want to have a really deep and interesting and nuanced conversation. And like, I'm not being met by that anywhere. And that can be a really lonely experience, even though I'm with you here. Yes. And that's that longing has a love at the core of it. There's a passion there that you want to bring to life. Mm-hmm. And so many times we can get stuck there because we're looking to other people to be the recipient of our love, and maybe that's just not happening, or other things, like maybe we're going after a goal and or applying for a job and we just keep getting turned down. So if someone had told me when I was in like the depths of my struggle that lonely is love with nowhere to go, and so the anecdote must be just give your love somewhere to go, I would have said, screw you. Like, you don't know me.
Yeah.
But what it can look like in the moment is really pragmatic stuff. Like, first of all, getting to the core of that love. Like, what do I want to experience? I want to experience connection. Okay, well, if I'm not getting it in this scenario, then maybe I can get it by sending a text to my friend that I'm sending with no expectation of them responding. I just want to tell them that I love them. It can be as small as that. Or like, I don't know, I'm a dandelion wisher. Like, you know, the dandelions grow up from the ground, like you make a wish and you blow on them. Mm-hmm. That to me, it's kind of a silly example. But for me, that feels like giving my love somewhere to go, because not to make it too, you know, ethereal, but that's me making a wish and appreciating the moment and being so present in the moment that I'm not searching, I'm not striving. I am taking that love, turning it in on myself and letting it sort of fill up the moment. So giving your love somewhere to go doesn't have to be in the very scenario that you're feeling that loneliness. Yeah. Because what I found in the work that I do, the clients that I work with, the people that I've spoken to, is that loneliness often does not live in a silo, in a very narrow place in our lives. If we are feeling lonely and we feel that at work, it's not like when we get out of work, we're like, all right, well, I don't feel lonely anymore. We carry that with us. Mm-hmm. And so it's about getting curious and asking yourself, okay, well, where can I get that thing that I'm after? Connection, clarity, you know, shared creativity, whatever it is.
Yeah. And do you think for a woman, when it comes to wanting to put that love somewhere, mm-hmm. do you feel like women put that love sometimes in the wrong places because they feel like it needs somewhere to go? For example, a toxic relationship or something. I think as women, as much as I think now it's becoming more normalized for women to hustle and work and all that stuff, but I think at the end of the day, at least for a lot of women I know, and even sometimes for myself personally, I'm like, okay, at the end of the day, I want to be a wife. I want to be a mother. These are just things that instincts we are born with, that motherly nature that we are born with. Do you feel like sometimes a woman puts too much of that love and that energy and that effort into the hope of a guy?
I love this question because, so my platform is called Women Against Negative Talk.
Yeah.
And I've had conversations with people of all genders, and particularly men have said, well, I feel like this speaks to me too, but it's women against negative talk. So is this just for women? And I think that we oftentimes think that our struggles are very segmented, but there are things that people experience as a part of the human experience, like all humans experience. We just experience it in different ways. Yeah. And so, yes, with some women and also some men, like there's a whole conversation about toxic masculinity. Or if you're talking about people who are non-binary, that's a whole other conversation. Yeah. And I think that that's what ends up happening is when we feel that sense of ungroundedness in ourself, or we feel that sense of loneliness and we want to fill that feeling that feels like a void, oftentimes what we'll do is we'll go to what's easiest and what's expected and what we think is going to get us that thing. And so for some women, that might be very traditional female roles in society. For some men, that's where you see some men heading down like the toxic masculinity route. Yeah. And that's why in my work, I'm so passionate about getting to the self part of self-talk. Yeah. Because all of that other stuff, that's the talk. That those are the places to go. Those are the things. Those are the what's. Let's get to the why of how am I feeling? Why am I feeling the way that I'm feeling? And what is actually going to feel the best for me? And maybe that is going to be, well, I really, really, really want to be a mom so badly. That is something that I've wanted since I was a little kid. Some people, that's never what they've wanted, yeah. but they feel like they have to fit that mold. Some people who've always wanted to be a mom or be in a relationship and be a wife, they sometimes can feel bad. I think there's a conversation that is worth having around this idea that women all over think that they need to be one thing.
Yep.
And that one thing is actually different for so many of us. Mm-hmm. So women can want to be a mom, be a wife. They can also want to have a career, not be married, not have kids. It's about honoring not only who you are, but recognizing, well, who have I been made to believe I'm expected to be? And is my desire, or is it an expectation? I don't know if that answers your question.
No, it does. And I like how you, even that last part with the expectation versus like, is this something I actually want to do, or mm-hmm. do I only want to do it because the people around me are doing it? Like, there's people my age who are getting married. There's people my age who are, you know, getting out of relationships. Like, yeah. everyone's on a different timeline. And I think when you see maybe your friend happy in a relationship, it makes you want to be in a relationship because you want to be happy like she is. But then when you see your friend get out of a relationship and thriving and single, you're like, wait, maybe I want to be single. You know, I
totally.
Feel like it's so like, that's why when they say like breakup season, like it's contagious. Like you see people breaking up and being single and it starts to make you think like, maybe I'm supposed to be doing that. Like,
yeah.
it, like you said before, we are so influenced by the things around us. And I yeah. think especially in this age, trying to figure out who you are, we subconsciously look at how other people are and we're like, is that the lifestyle I want to live? If so, I'm going to follow every step that person took to get to where they are mm-hmm. so that I could be where they are too.
Yeah. And I think that this is a great conversation, especially to be having like with you and your audience, because a lot of times we get asked the question, what do you want to be or who do you want to be when you grow up? Up until we're about 23, 24, which is really interesting because if you look at the data of products that are marketed to us, a lot of the target demographic to anti-aging products, stuff that is really geared to us fixing parts of ourselves, yeah. that demographic is the 24-year-old. Mm-hmm. And that's the time that we stop getting asked, who do you want to be? What do you want to be when you grow up? So it makes sense that your 20s feel a little bit like you're flying by the seat of your pants because you've spent your entire life up until that moment being asked, what do you want? Who do you want to be? And then you get to a point where it's like, all right, we think you should have it all figured out, and now we're going to go into fixing things.
Yeah.
And so I think that it's really valuable. I wish that I had had this information when I was 24 because I could start paying attention to it and I could get really proactive within myself, be like, no, I'm going to keep asking myself throughout my life, what do I want to be when I grow up? Mm-hmm. Who do I want to be? Because that changes
all the time.
Do you know the show Lessons in Chemistry? That
I
is don't. It's on I believe it's streaming right now on one of the platforms.
Yeah.
And it's based on a book that was written by a woman who it was her debut novel. She's in her 60s. Like, we have so much life
yep.
to define and redefine and birth and rebirth ourselves. And I think sometimes our 20s, and I feel that even in my 30s, we can feel like we have this finite time, we have to have it figured out. And that can be really, really harmful when it comes to our negative self-talk, because mm-hmm. then we are who we believe ourselves to be. And if we believe ourselves to be someone who should have things figured out by a certain point, then what happens when we pass that point? So I think it's really, really valuable to keep checking in with yourself and getting into that habit as early as possible so that as you move through your 20s, 30s, 40s, your entire life,
yeah.
you can keep asking yourself these questions that are going to unearth and reveal more and more of who you are to yourself throughout your life.
Yeah, I agree. And like you said, my mind changes every hour. Like,
yeah.
Like 1 hour, I'm like, oh yeah. Like, especially when you're graduating college, I'm like, okay, do I want to work a corporate job? Do I want to go all in with what I'm doing now? Like, you know, you feel like there's all these decisions to make and there's so much pressure on having it figured out before you're 25.
It's yeah.
like, 25 is so young. Like, it's crazy that you're expected to have it all figured out. And people put timelines for you. They put expectations for you. Like you said, people expect you to have it figured out at a certain time. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm Middle Eastern, so I come from, like, a community of women who get married before they're 25 and have their first kid before they're 25.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it's like in our community. And so I'm 23, so I'm always getting asked, like, are you seeing anyone? Are you dating anyone? Da, da, da. And I'm like, no, I'm not. And
yeah.
they're like, oh, it's okay. And I'm like, I know.
You're like, it is okay. I know.
Like, I'm still in school. Like, I feel like there's such a stigma around the timeline people give you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you let it get to your head, it will get to your head so badly. And that's something I've been working on, is like shutting out the outside noise and just thinking to myself, this is the chapter in life that I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy. And it's also one of those things where if this is the chapter of life that I'm in, I'm supposed to be in it. So I'm going to
yeah.
enjoy it. If I'm supposed to be single at this age, I'm going to be single at this age. And
mm-hmm.
I was in a relationship for about 5 to 6 years. So me and my significant other broke up when I was 22.
Mm-hmm.
And like thinking that I was going to get married in a year or two, and then that ending and being like, whoa, now what? Like, it's
mm-hmm.
a big wake up call when things like that happen to you, whether it's a breakup or you lose a job offer or something happens with school. It's a wake-up call that, wait, that's not the chapter of life I was supposed to be in right now. Like, my book wasn't supposed to go that way. It was supposed to go this other way. And that's kind of goes with what we were saying earlier about trusting yourself and trusting
yeah.
that no matter what chapter you're in, no matter what breaks through or falls through, you trust yourself enough to kind of, like, pick up those pieces.
Yeah, and recognizing, like, why it is important to trust yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that it can be easy for us to just say, well, just trust yourself, love yourself. First of all, You need to know, like, what and who yourself is. And then why yourself is worth loving, worth trusting, what that even means. Like, when people talk about having self-confidence, for example, people talk about self-confidence. And self-confidence, if you look up confidence in the dictionary, it actually – it says firm trust. Confidence means trust. And so a lot of times we will chase these things like confidence, and we're actually going after the wrong thing. We're going after the look of it instead of the feel of it. Mm-hmm. So if confidence is trust, how do I give myself ways to trust myself? And that can be the easiest, maybe seemingly silliest things, as I told myself I'm going to make my bed today. It's 9 o'clock. My bed is not made, so I'm going to make it before I go to sleep in an hour or whatever it is. Like, giving yourself that proof that you are worth trusting. Or self-love. I think that a lot of times we get self-love and self-like completely mixed up, because we think that if we don't like something about our appearance, or if we don't like a way that we were interacting in a certain way, we think that that means that we must not love ourselves. But I view self-love more along the lines of unconditional love. So if you think of, like, the people or maybe the pets that you have that you love unconditionally, like, yeah, they're going to annoy you sometimes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not going to agree with them sometimes, but that doesn't affect the love. So I think it's really, really important that as we're going towards these things that can feel a little pie in the sky, we get super crystal clear on what we're actually going after, why it matters to us, and how we can take the steps to get there, along the lines of, like, building a habit versus I'm only going to do this when I really, really need it. That's like, I'm not a sports person, so I apologize, but that's like, oh my gosh, I was just about to say rehearsal, but that's like not going to practice for football and then saying, okay, well, I'm just going to go play in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
It's really hard to just go play in the Super Bowl if you haven't been practicing your sport and honing it in the times that feel the most neutral, and taking those steps inch by inch before you get to these big times in life. Because the big times will happen. They just, they will. But most of our life is made up of these micro moments, and that's when we actually build the core of who we are.
Yeah, and it's so funny because I don't think I've ever even thought, do I trust myself, ever? Mm-hmm. Like, I've thought of self-control, I've thought of self-love, like, I haven't thought of self-trust, and, like, how I find it, like, so valuable to have in a friend or in a partner, trust, obviously, in a family member, in any relationship I have outside of myself, trust has to be there. And I've never actually thought to myself, like, do I trust myself? Like, if I tell myself I need to wake up at 8 a.m. tomorrow to get ready to go into the city, do I trust myself to wake up at 8 a.m.? Sometimes I'll tell my sister, come into my room at 8 a.m. and make sure I'm awake, because I don't trust myself to do it. Mm-hmm. So I think it's so interesting. Or even, like, me and my sister will be like, we're going on clean diets, and then we'll tell my dad, don't buy junk food, because if there's junk food, we don't trust ourselves around it. Yeah. It. Like, it's crazy. And it does kind of tie in with self-control. Can you control yourself? And self-love. Do I love myself enough to take these extra steps? So I love how you're bringing up self-trust, because I've never thought of self-trust before.
Yeah. I think that I love that you said I value trust so much in my other relationships. When we start to view our relationship with ourself in the same way that we view our relationships with other people, then the game starts to change, because then we start to get into the mindset of, okay, well, what do I actually value? And I think that it can be really easy to say to ourselves sort of this pithy phrase of, well, I'm experiencing negative self-talk, but if I wouldn't say it to a friend, why am I saying it to myself? Yeah. It's a nice phrase. And I also I do not use the word never or always, or I don't use these sort of universal words very often, but I will say I have never met a person who, when they have had negative self-talk, they've just said to themselves, oh, well, I wouldn't talk to my friend like that, so I'm not going to talk to myself like that. Like, all better. Mm-hmm. It's a process, and it's individual for everybody. And I think that you also have to ask yourself, okay, well, how would I talk to my friend? I would talk to my friend this way, or how would I value my friend for who they were, or would I impose my opinions and my assumptions on that person. Like, we can take all of these relationship dynamics that we look at outside of ourselves, and we can start to play with, like, what does that look like with my own relationship with myself?
Yeah, you have to treat yourself like someone you love. Like, if you're dating someone, you're not going to be tearing them down when they don't look good. You're not going to be like, that outfit looks horrible on you. You need to go back and change. You shouldn't go out. You look so bad. But we'll have those thoughts about ourselves.
Yeah, and oftentimes, whether it's love that maybe develops over time and is you wouldn't consider unconditional, or the loves that you do consider unconditional love in your life, those very rarely happen instantaneously. They very rarely happen like right off the bat. That is built over time through stuff like knowing that you have mutual trust or respect. And so I think that sometimes we think, okay, well, I should just love myself because it's so easy for me to love other people. I'm going to love myself. Okay, how did you build that love with that person? Why do you love that person? And then ask, okay, well, how can I build, like, reverse engineer it?
Yeah.
How can I build that love within myself instead of thinking that I need to go from 0 to 100 in a day?
Yeah. And when you love someone and you want the relationship to work, you will go through everything to make sure it works. Like, whether you're going to couples therapy or you start going on more date nights or you have more conversations, you take the steps to make that relationship work because you love that person and you love that relationship with them. And it's like you said, it's a mutual thing that you both have to agree on. So when it comes to yourself, you take everyone else out of the equation. If you owe it to yourself, you owe it to yourself to take the steps to love your own company, to not feel lonely just because you're alone.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. I think that it is revolutionary when we start to look at our relationship with ourself, like capital S, as a dynamic, ever-evolving relationship, just like we would look at our relationships with maybe a long-term partner. Mm-hmm. And in a long-term partnership, as someone who's been with my husband for we've been together for 10 years. We've been married for 6 now. Like, love also requires boundaries.
Yeah.
And self-love also requires boundaries. So you will do things to, you know, make something work or to show someone that you love them. But there are certain things that you won't do. Like, everybody has to have their own boundaries. And those are very specific within each relationship. My boundaries with my husband are very different than my boundaries with my best girlfriend or with my parents or my brother. Like, they're ever evolving. And there's this great quote by someone named Prentice Hemphill, and they say, boundaries are the distance at which I can love both me and you simultaneously. I love that quote. Mm-hmm. And if we're putting that onto ourselves, then it's like, okay, well, what's like the push and pull between what I think I need to do to love myself and what I actually need? Like, what am I willing to do? And what is a hard no, hard stop? Because those are really important too.
Yeah, setting boundaries with yourself is so important. That just goes back to valuing the relationship with yourself.
Totally.
The last point I want to bring up from your book that I highlighted too, because we were talking about social media before, and I think everything is social media nowadays. You can make a career out of anything with social media.
Mm-hmm.
And you said social media is like a magnifying mirror for our pre-existing social habits. We're more connected than ever, but feeling more disconnected at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that because I feel like social media does make us feel so connected as a community. But then when you kind of put your phone away, you feel like alone. You feel like you don't have anyone there because everyone is kind of like through a social presence. So can you kind of go through what you meant when you wrote that and where it comes from?
Yeah. So how we are on social media oftentimes is at least a glimmer of how we are in the outside world. And the thing that's really interesting about social media is that social media is literally engineered to show us more of what we like, what we want, or what we are interested in paying attention to. And when I talk about social media sort of amplifying however we are outside in the world, I find it really interesting that the people who I notice have the most beef with social media and are like, it's so negative, it's this, it's like trolls everywhere and just like flame wars, whatever you want to call it, a lot of times these are people who are also practicing a lot of what I call casual negativity in their lives. And casual negativity is the negative talk that we use basically without emotion attached. So saying something like, the wall is white, same tone, same emotions as, ugh, I hate my body. Like, this is the stuff that we talk about so conversationally that we've been talking about habits a lot in this conversation, that it's become a habit. It's become the language that we're fluent in. And so, of course, we're going to take that language that we're speaking and those conversations that we are already having, we're going to look out for them on social media, because we don't get into a habit of casual negativity just because, like, oh, I really like being negative all the time. There's a desire there, right? Usually it's a desire for connection. Mm-hmm. Studies show that we bond way quicker over things that we have a shared negativity bias towards than something that we think we love. Even if we think that we bond over the things that we love, like, those connections happen way quicker over the negative stuff. So whether that is bonding over, you're not feeling good, and so I'm going to talk about how I'm not feeling good. We're going to be talking about what we don't like about this thing, and we're just sort of piling on to these things, these phrases that we say that can even be like self-deprecating humor all of the time. That is a form of casual negativity. And what happens is when we take that onto social media and onto the internet, the problem is that we've lost the nuance of that in-person interaction, and all we're left with is the words and then the feelings that we have on the outside of our phone or computer, whatever it is that we're watching, the feelings that we are left with. And so I think this is like perfect full circle moment, going back to our conversation with social media and leaning into the social part of social media. I think that if you are someone who is feeling like social media is having a really negative effect on your life, on your mental health, I am all for like a mass unfollow or mute or a full social media break. Like, love all of that. And also, like you said, social media is kind of everything now. And so it's everywhere. And so I'm more about, okay, well, how, if this is something that is going to exist, how do I manage its role in my life? And that starts with managing my life outside of social media. And so I think being conscious of the conversations that you have and the stuff that you're paying attention to outside of social media, that can start to shift even what you're paying attention to on social media, because certain things might not seem as interesting anymore because you're not looking for that shared connection over the negativity, you know?
Yeah, I love that. And even like your algorithm will notice what you're looking for. Like if you're searching up day in my life, productive day in my life, healthy videos, all this stuff, your, you know, algorithm will pick it up. And now you see social media. Like, I know me, I go through social media as inspiration now. Like my Pinterest, my Instagram, because I also had an Instagram cleanse on my personal Instagram where I unfollowed, I think, like 2,000 people, and I removed like 3,000 followers.
Oh, that must have felt so good.
Oh, it felt so good. I was like, oh, I finally have like a small Instagram. Like now I post whatever I want because I don't care about who's seeing it. I went private. I was like, I know everyone who follows me. I know everyone I follow. And then on Pinterest and TikTok, I only follow accounts that inspire me and motivate me. And you can make your social media something that is a positive.
Yeah. You can like rig your social media. Yes. So my TikTok is basically all musical theater, Beyonce, and Muppets.
Yeah.
That's my TikTok. Yeah. And that's not because the algorithm is some like person who is spying on me. Yeah. It's that it is a system that the zeros and ones of the system are like, oh, this chick really likes these things, so we're going to show her more of that. And I know that there's a whole other ecosystem on TikTok that exists and that can be helpful, can be harmful. But what I'm seeing is I've told TikTok, okay, if I am going on you app, then I just want to see videos of the Renaissance Tour. I want to see, I saw a musical theater rave the other day. I was like, this is amazing. Like, tell me more.
Yeah.
And like Muppet things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's a wonderful, wonderful place. And so I think there's so much that in life on social media that is out of our control. And it's important to recognize that that will always be the case, but it will also always be the case that there are at least one or two things that are in our control. And so how can we lean into that to create the environments that we want to be a part of and ultimately like the life that we want to live?
Yeah, that's a great way to kind of use social media to your advantage too, and like to motivate and inspire rather than tear you down. And instead of being envious, be inspired of like, oh, you love that person's lifestyle. Well, then why don't you work on your lifestyle so it becomes something that you love too?
Or if you like just want to laugh all the time, then go and go to comedy accounts or like little cartoon accounts and like them, interact with them so that you're telling the system, this is more of what I want to see. I think that we forget, because so much of this feels so big and complex, that sometimes these small changes, just like in life, that we make, those can make a really big difference.
Definitely. Something I like to end off with all my guests is I like to ask them their favorite quote that you think of or have to remind yourself of every day, whether it's something you think of during the week, on the month, where you're just having a bad day and then you remember this quote. What is your favorite quote?
Oh.
It's a tough one.
I know.
I'm such a quotes girl. I love quotes.
I love quotes. Yeah. Love quotes. I think that my favorite quote has to be, it's actually one that I put in the book, and it was an interaction, and it's a quote from an Oprah interview, and it was an interview that she did on 60 Minutes in the 80s right before her show launched. And the interviewer was like, so this show that's just getting underway? And she said, yeah, it'll do well. And he said, but what if it doesn't? And she said, well, it'll do well, and if it doesn't, I will do well, because I am not defined by a show. I think that we are defined by who we are and what we cultivate in our lives. And, you know, it would be great if I was this wonderful acclaimed talk show host, but if that doesn't happen, I will still do well, because there are other things that matter to me and that are important in my life. And I think that that's something that I carry with me often, because the nature of the work that I do, like, you have a physical book in front of you that, you know, a lot of people would say it doing well, so to speak, is it selling a ton of books. A ton is very different for every single person. Yeah. For one person, 50 books might be a ton. For another person, 50,000 might be a ton. Mm-hmm. And so I think coming back to the things that matter the most in my life, the things that define success for me as Katie, the human being, who also does all of these other things, I think that is the thing that keeps me the most grounded in myself and the most focused, and keeps me from getting swept up in sort of the chase of things that other people think our success, but maybe I don't at my core, you know?
Yeah, I love that. And that also just goes back to who you are, what you love, what you value, because that's different for everyone, what everyone perceives. Like, you can be in the same, you could be, we could both be staring at that window and seeing completely different things.
Yeah, exactly.
Tell us all your socials. I'm going to link your socials below and your book, but just for everyone listening so they know where to find you.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me,
by
the way.
Of course, you are amazing. So many. I can't wait to like clip everything. I'm like, everything you say in my mind, I'm like, mental clip.
Yeah, I had the best time with you.
Amazing.
So if people also had a really good time as they were listening or watching this, they can find me on social media at Katie Horwich. It's just my name. They can find out more about Want and dig into those tips, tools, resources at womenagainstnegativetalk.com. I am on Instagram. I will say I'm on TikTok, but again, like, I go there for the Muppets and Beyonce and the musical theater raves.
Yeah.
So I'm not as active on there, but I do love interacting with the people and accounts that I do find on there. And they can find Want Yourself, Shift Your Self-Talk, and Unearth the Strength in Who You Were All Along. As they say, wherever books are sold, they can go to wantyourself.com, find more, find all the places they can order them, and dig in and do this work on their own. I can't wait to see and hear where it takes people.
Yes, and I will link it down below for you guys, so everything will be super easy to find in the description. Thank you so much for coming on and meeting me today. It was amazing to record with you.
Thank you. I just had the best time.